It is 7:06 in the Twin Cities. Esmae Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Well, you know, I get to meet, one of the great things about my job is I get to meet a lot of people, and people say, oh, you've got such a cool job. And it is a cool job. I will absolutely say that. But sometimes you meet people or you talk to people and you think, that's really a cool job. My next guest fits into that category. He is Chris Riemenschneider, and he is the pop rock music critic, if that's the correct title, we'll ask him, for the Star Tribune. He is also, he literally wrote the book, I mean this, on First Avenue. He wrote a beautiful, really cool coffee table book on First Avenue that I hope is still available, because I actually got it for my husband for Christmas one year, and he loved it. And he's also here to talk to us about the new First Avenue exhibit at the Minnesota History Center. Chris Riemenschneider, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, hey, Esmae, how are you?
Great. Now, do I have you like your official title? Like,
yeah, music critic, music reporter. You know, sometimes right. we're now, doing the real reporting.
Do you get
crime scene stuff?
Crime scene. But do you get that? Sometimes people are like, "That's a really great job."
Yeah, and I always, you know, they always seem to say that after I've just reviewed a Nickelback concert or something really terrible, and I roll my eyes stupidly. Yeah, no, of course, most days it is a very fun job, and never dull, that's for sure.
Right, and you did, when did you write the book on First Ave?
Well, I wrote it for about 2.5 years, the action of writing it, and then they published it just before Christmas in 2017, so it's been out about a year and a half.
Right. And anyway, it's a great book, and is it still out? Can people still get it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
This exhibit, they kind of made sure they're going to have copies for people who go to this exhibit.
Because it really is great, and for so many generations, it's you know, it really is such an iconic place, and it means so many things to so many people in different ways. And I think you kind of take us through that. Obviously, it is and forever is linked with Prince, who you covered extensively. What is your take on the exhibit in general?
Yeah, no, I mean, the exhibit is heavily based on my book, for me personally, it was just a thrill. It was almost like my book come to life, you know, in almost like a movie version of my book, or a 3D movie version of my book. They went above and beyond the book too. The folks at the Minnesota Historical Society, they did some really clever stuff in there. It's been open about a month now, and the feedback, it's been really positive. But I'm blown away when it's people that either have never been to the club, and that's totally fine, but they understand that, okay, if it's at the History Center, it must be something special, which I love. And then there's the people that have that go there twice a week, and you know, these super punk rock people that you know aren't impressed with much, but they to hear positive reaction from them has been really nice too.
Right. And then, you know, and I think and certainly you did not, but there were many of us here when Prince was with us who sort of took it for granted that there was this superstar in our midst. And, you know, you see it sometimes when people are obviously from a foreign country and they're kind of, you know, in downtown, they kind of have their sort of lost look around them. Invariably, they're trying to find their way to First Avenue.
Yeah.
And it's because of Prince. What was it about First Ave this is somebody who could obviously played all kinds of venues everywhere.
Yeah.
What was the connection there, and what was the energy that he liked there?
You know, it's interesting that about a year before he played his first First Avenue show, which at the time it wasn't called First Avenue, it was called Sam's. And about a year before that, he played the Orpheum, and it didn't. I mean, people, you know, it had its moments, but it just didn't click. And then here at Sam's, it was huge, and it, part of it was just this open big dance floor, which obviously with Prince was important as opposed to a seated venue. But, you know, it really was, and people in my book talk about this who knew him, that he, you know, he was a rock guy, he loved the diversity there. I mean, they had world music there, they had R&B there, you know, it was kind of the literally being in downtown, it was kind of the bridge between the North Minneapolis population and other parts of Minneapolis geographically and you know, sort of just you know, spiritually, I guess. And yeah, he just for some reason really clicked on with that place, and he went on to play. He only played 9 full shows there, but
really?
each of those shows, which there's bootlegs of each of those shows. They're all really something special. They're all really unique. They're all different from each other. He was always trying out new material, or he was about to go on tour and was warming up, or sometimes he was just blowing off steam after a long tour and having fun. And they're all really cool shows. And of course, you know, the prime example of that is on August 3rd, 1983, he did this benefit show for Minnesota Dance Theater, which was sort of just a front for he was testing out the songs of, he wasn't just testing them out, the songs of Purple Rain, he was recording them. And 3 of the songs that we hear on the album version of Purple Rain were recorded live at First Avenue, and including the song Purple Rain, and they just kind of cut out the audience noise, and most people don't know that those are legitimately live tracks.
Right. And actually, well, and now there's so much, I mean, we could, you know, talk to you for a long time about this. Now there's so much about how much he did record, and the treasure trove that exists of all kinds of recordings that he made, which he did not anticipate. Obviously, those ones, he had complete control, and he liked having that control. He had control over the release of those. A lot now is getting released that he apparently may not have wanted released, certainly when he was alive. I mean,
that's heavily debated amongst folks that love him. But, you know, my feeling is always, yeah, I mean, he's one of the most amazing musicians in the world. We need to hear anything and everything by him. He's, you know, whether he liked it or not, it's going to make a lot of other people happy.
Right.
So why not?
Right. So tell us about this exhibit, because it is open and it's going through 2020. What is it? And as I said, your book was great, and you're saying it's like taking your book and kind of putting it up in 3D. What are some of the things that you really like, or that people who have been through it really like?
Lots of things. You walk in and there's a nice real big section with big photos on the original Greyhound Bus Depot, which is what it was. Before it became a nightclub, it was the main Greyhound Bus Depot, and it was actually quite a gorgeous building at the time, and kind of a crown jewel of downtown. So there's a real nice section of that, and that you on the opposite end, it goes up to really very current of what's going on at First Avenue today. There's a real nice cross section of the groups that are playing there now, which it's more diverse than it's ever been. I would argue that it's maybe more vibrant in terms of the local scene than it's ever been. I like the yin and yang of that. A couple of the really fun features of it, there's some really great audio visual stuff. They've got this one room that's sort of a made up version of the main room with the stage and the screen that goes up, and they show this video throughout that with interviews with, you know, people who played there, people who worked there, really some fun stories. And then they have all 7th Street Entry, which, you know, is the kid sister, the tiny
right
club attached. And they have old video clips from there, and you see early video of the Jayhawks and the Replacements when they were playing the Entry, you know, just baby bands, and that stuff's really fun too.
Right.
Last but not least, there's the Doom Tree. Doom Tree was a big local hip hop collective of the past decade plus. We have their old tour van. And their old tour van is,
oh, wow,
is there, and it's sort of an interactive thing now, where it's partly for the kids. Kids can try to pack all of Doomtree's gear into the van, and it's a fun feature. I just over the weekend saw someone tweeting a video of these, they call them grandma aged women.
They look like
people that women that probably aren't hanging at the club much these days. Who knows? 49 years ago, they might have been there for the Joe Cocker opening concert. But they were having a blast with the Doomtree van, and I just thought that was so cool.
Right. Well, it's interesting what you were saying about the 7th Street entry. Obviously, that has such a following as well, and seeing some of those early things. I just on a side note there, I mean, I think you obviously are the chronicler of the Minneapolis music scene, the Minnesota music scene. I think, again, I would argue that people here who live here don't quite get how big a deal it is. And of all people, this is just I realize this is a bit of a tangent. Of all people that I was interviewing who mentioned just the two bands you mentioned that the early video of playing in the 7th Street entry, Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah, sure he did. Yeah.
The presidential candidate. And I was at his town hall at Edison High School, and he talked a lot about that. And the photographer, the camera guy I was with, spent a lot of time at First Ave, and actually, went to many, many concerts out at Paisley Park, but a lot of time at First Ave, and so knew all these and knew many of the band people. And I didn't think I was going to get a political question in. I mean, they could have talked the whole time about that.
That's great.
But,
I've talked, I talked to musicians that are coming to town, the touring musicians from other towns, and from the veterans on down to the up and comers, they inevitably First Avenue comes up and how much they like playing there. Or for the older acts, it's how important it was to their coming up, and so I kind of knew going into writing the book that this was more than just a local thing. This very much is a national, maybe even international, recognized place.
Yeah, we're chatting with Chris Riemenschneider. He is the Star Tribune rock pop music critic. You can read him in the Star Tribune, but he also has, as I said, literally written the book on First Ave. And apparently this exhibit, which I have not yet seen, takes your book, which kind of chronicles First Ave and kind of puts the music, the video clips, all of that out there. Let me ask you on the print stuff. Mm-hmm. One of the things is I actually have run into some folks who did play in some of the early, early, early bands with Prince.
Yeah.
And is there video of that out there? Because they were having trouble finding it, and they're convinced that someone was. And it's, of course, it wasn't that long ago, but it was in the area. Now there's video of everything.
Yeah, it's pretty scant. One of my colleagues, Andrea Swenson, she wrote a book called "Got to Be Something Here," and that was kind of the '60s and '70s R&B and soul scene here in town, leading up to Prince, and Prince just kind of comes in at the end of it. One of the things about that book was she really had to research that. There really wasn't a lot of that wasn't well documented, unfortunately. The earliest Prince stuff I've seen is his very first Minneapolis show was at the Capri Theater in North Minneapolis, and it's a grainy black and white video, but that is all over YouTube, and
right.
It's cool. He famously kind of wasn't Prince right away. He needed to work on his live show a little bit, and obviously it worked out. He got it down eventually.
He certainly did. And how old would he have been in that one? I mean, what year approximately do you think that? Because I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's not great quality, but
I mean, probably about 19 or 20. I would say.
Wow. Okay. Because there are some stories from some folks who played with him, in the high school years, and you think, gosh, wouldn't that be cool? And you have to think that maybe perhaps somewhere it exists. And obviously, if somebody's got it, it's worth a pretty penny. But
I don't think anybody's got it sitting there. If somebody does have it, I'm sure they're not just keeping it under the bed at this point. I'm sure it'll get out if it does exist.
Right. Well, Chris Riemenschneider, as I said, I want to go over there. And the History Center, I'm sure they did this up, and I'm sure they did this right, because every single thing I've gone to over there, they really do a good job. I mean, these people are really good at what they do.
Yeah, no, and I mean, that's one of the reasons why I went to them with the book in the first place, because the book is the Minnesota Historical Society Press, kind of their publishing arm, because they do such a good job, and I did kind of like playing up the idea of this being a Minnesota landmark, that this really is a historic landmark in Minnesota, and the exhibit just, you know, totally hammers that home.
Right, absolutely. Well, it certainly is. And as I said, you know, I see people, you know, in downtown, and you can almost tell her way. They kind of got the cameras, and they're kind of like looking, and you're like, it's a few blocks over there. It's a little hard with all the construction. But
yeah, exactly. I was going to say, I get lost trying to find it myself.
Me too. I work downtown as well. Chris Riemenschneider, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
really appreciate
you,
it. Okay,
take
absolutely. Take care. Really, this book, if you have a music lover, somebody who's into the music scene, first of all, it sounds like it's a really cool exhibit. And as I said, I do know people who, you know, Chris Riemenschneider actually, you know, knew Prince. I know people who worked with him and were in some of the earlier bands, and they say it's just really a cool exhibit. And they do an amazing job over there. And the book itself is really a fun book. And I'm glad to hear that they have copies over there at the exhibit, which you can purchase. I mean, great gift for somebody, maybe Father's Day or a birthday gift for somebody who's into the music scene here. And as I said, I interviewed Beto O'Rourke, guys running for president. And, you know, I should talk about this. I haven't really talked about that on the radio. He was here a number of weeks ago. And very personable, very nice guy. Had a packed house at Edison High School. The photographer I was with, Joe, is just somebody who's a big music guy, and especially, you know, in this era that Beto O'Rourke was a fan of. And I was like, I kind of need to ask him about running for president, and they could have talked music all night. Anyway, folks, you are listening to News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm overdue for a break. Keep it right here, though. Much more ahead on this edition of Saturday Night with Esme. Hello. It's 7:25 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy, along with our producer, Devin Marshall, and just, you know, talking to Chris Riemenschneider. It really is amazing, you know, what a wonderful music scene we had. And you were saying how, you know, you didn't really realize that some of the songs from the album, The Purple Rain, were recorded at First Ave. And you might not know, but obviously that's the perspective that he brings.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's amazing. And it's so sad the more you think about what a genius he was and how he could play every track.
Yeah, and every instrument.
He didn't need a band. He could play every instrument. I mean, it just really what an amazing, amazing individual. And it's interesting. Someday we should get Chris Riemenschneider on, because he is really one of the experts on Prince. But there is a debate now about releasing all this video and audio that he recorded, and obviously he had these super high standards. But, you know, Chris said something interesting there that, you know, he was such a genius, such a gift to all of us. You almost do want to hear anything that he had recorded, even if he felt it wasn't quite
up to
ready.
Par.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would want to see in anything he did, too. Any videos.
Right.
I'm always interested in the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Oh, sure.
And just in the
sure.
studio, being, you know, his creative process. All of that. So I would watch any of that.
Right. And it would be fascinating to see. I mean, I find it, you know, and Chris was talking about how, and he would know, how little video there is of the really early years, you know, when he was a teenager growing up, because he was playing all over the place. And he had a band, I think, that was a rival band to Jimmy Jam. You were talking about the great legendary producer, Jimmy Jam. But apparently there's very little out there that is in the public domain, but you have to think somebody's got it in their attic somewhere, and, you know, the reel-to-reel stuff. That would be really, really cool. But that exhibit at the History Center is supposed to be amazing. And I've been to other exhibits there, and these people, they do a great job at the History Center. It's a really, really fun place to go, and they really make it live. I mean, they really do, which is very, very cool. So I'll have to check that out. But he is, that book of his on First Ave is a very, very cool book. And I think anybody who spent any time in Minnesota, most of us have been to First Ave, haven't you? Even I've been to First Ave.
Oh, yeah. I've been there for a few shows. And what's so cool, and I can't even imagine seeing Prince there, is it's such a small venue.
It is a small venue, yeah. I mean, that's what's amazing.
It's such a personal experience. Right. And there is some video of Prince playing there. And, you know, they'd say he'd go up for hours and play.
Right.
Or he'd come straight there from a big gig, and he'd go, which is another amazing thing. Like Chris was saying, that he'd come back straight off to First Avenue to just
right, and then out. And while the parties or his own parties at Paisley Park that he would play at, I went for hours as well. I mean, he was just had that much, you know, just energy and virtuosity. So
and love for
yeah, just amazing stuff. Well, I have to get over there and check that. Check that out, because it does sound like a really cool exhibit. And as I said, they do a really great job over there. And the book, if it's completely modeled on the book's really good and really interesting and has some great photos, and was also published by Minnesota Historical Society Press, which does a great job, by the way, of publishing books. They really do. They've got some great titles out there and really interesting stuff, and just you know, fun reads and great visually as well. All right, folks, we do need to take a break. We are going to give you some weather. You'll want to hear the weather. It's actually going to be warmer. Yay, warmth. And looks like it's going to be pretty decent there. And then in the 7:35, the next half hour, we're going to talk about a remarkable act of philanthropy. Free Y memberships for thousands of Twin Cities teens. We did a little thing on this on TV, and I thought, you know, I want to do more on this, because that's a really cool gift. It's from the Richard Schultz Family Foundation. Richard Schultz, of course, the founder of Best Buy. Really a remarkable gift. I can't think of anything more important than to have, you know, teenagers have some place to go and to be and to hang out. And that's exactly what he's done. And we're going to tell you how you can take advantage of that. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, of course, the one and only David Schultz. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will give you, the weather. And then when we come back after the break after that, how you can take advantage, for a young person for a free Y membership. It is 7:34 in the Twin Cities. I want to invite you to tune in to WCCO-TV Sunday morning, 6 a.m., 10:30 a.m. Matt Brickman actually will be in for Mike Augustinak, who has a well-deserved day off. And at 10:30 a.m., it's a real honor to have the governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz, come in and give his perspective about the legislature, what got done, what didn't get done, what he'd like to get done. He always has a lot of energy. He's actually a very fun person to interview. And he will have his take on what he'd like to see get done perhaps the next legislative session, and what his he is most proud of when it comes to this past session. All right. Right now, we're going to talk about a wonderful act of philanthropy. And actually, this is it's definitely the second year. It may be actually more years that the Richard Schultz Family Foundation has done this. They are providing free Y memberships for thousands of teens across the Twin Cities. How cool is this? I just think this is so wonderful. Courtney Harness is the executive director and program lead at Get Summer at YMCA. And Courtney, am I saying your last name correctly?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Courtney, this is so cool. And how long has the Richard Schultz Foundation done this?
You nailed it right on. This is the third year.
Third year, okay.
Richard Schultz Family Foundation has been providing funding for Get Summer.
Okay, because I think, I mean, this is such an amazing thing. I mean, this is really a living gift. Tell us how it works and how it's worked in the past few years and how people can take advantage of it.
Yeah, sure. So first, and you really started us off right, I cannot say thank you enough to the Richard M. Schultz Family Foundation. Their partnership and commitment to young people in the community has just been incredible and continues to be incredible throughout a lot of our work that we're doing with the YMCA. So I want to make sure that we thank them first. So in our third year, we're really excited. We've added so many new opportunities for young people this year. And really what Get Summer does is allow young people entering grades 9 through 12 the opportunity to access a free YMCA membership from June 1st through August 31st at 26 locations across the metro and all the way down to Rochester and even over into Hudson.
Oh, into Hudson?
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. So when you say it's a free, who qualifies for this?
Anyone qualifies. So as long as you're a high school student or you're going into grades 9 through 12, that's the only requirement. Otherwise, everything is free and you get all of the same opportunities and access that a regular YMCA member would have, along with some pretty cool, unique things as well.
And that's something that's important because I think that there are some people who might be concerned that you know, they can't maybe afford a membership or whatever, but they think, well, I'm not exactly super low income. Even if they're middle income, they can qualify for a membership.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really important to note, this is so much more than a program or an initiative or just a membership. This is really a commitment to our young people and to our future leaders. And so we wanted to make sure that regardless of race, class, income level, or where you live, you have the opportunity to access the YMCA all summer long.
All right. And so how do you go about to do that? I mean, can you go to any Y? And there, how many Ys again? 27?
26 locations throughout the metro, and like I said, into Rochester and over into Hudson.
Okay. How would you go about? Do you just show up at the front door?
Yeah, and you know what's really cool? We actually last year added an online registration option, and that option exists again this year. So super simple. It's www.ymcamn.org/getsummer. You can register right online there.
Okay. And I, you know, I've been to a few Ys. I actually had not been, and I know the Y in North Minneapolis had got a makeover a number of years ago, and I'm just obviously behind the times, but I was actually there for a wonderful program where the gym had been redone as a special part of the Final Four celebrations. It was a community project that the NCAA funded. And I had not been in that Y for a long time, and it looked amazing. And a number of the Ys just really are amazing places. Do you think this message has gotten out to kids that this is available?
Oh, yeah. I mean, by far. And, you know, if we want to talk about how many kids have already signed up, you know, over 5,500 high school students have already signed up. We just opened registration this past Tuesday. So over half of the spots that we have are gone. So I would say any listeners who are thinking about it or have kids that are going into high school, go online to that link now or get to your local Y and get them signed up.
Okay. And you just said something that's very important. So there is a limit on this.
Yeah, we've increased it each year. So we actually started out year one with 4,800 free memberships. We increased that to just over 6,000 last year, and we bumped it up significantly this year, and we'll be able to give out over 10,000 free memberships this year.
Wow. Okay. What are some of the things? Because I think, you know, people think maybe, and you know, teenagers, it's not an easy time. I mean, obviously there's basketball, there's other programs, but you know, many of the Ys have computers there where they can, you know, do kinds of online, you know, searches for jobs or, you know, all kinds of things. What are some of the facilities that you have at any number of your Ys around town?
Yeah, great question. And so Get Summer has three main objectives. The first one is safety, health, and well-being. And so making sure high school students have a safe, fun place to be all summer long. The second two objectives really get at some of those things that you just mentioned. So the second objective is job readiness and workforce development. So young people have the opportunity through partnerships with Junior Achievement, with partnerships with our own YMCA human resources team, to learn about what it looks like to get a job, how you go through that process, how you build a resume, and how you interview, really preparing themselves for that opportunity. And this year, I'm so proud of this. This year, we actually have 100 spots open in our Career Pathways program just for high school students in Get Summer. And Career Pathways is a 100-hour paid internship throughout the summer. So really, really cool.
Right. And then also, you know, if you don't have, you know, a lot of computer access at home, I mean, if you're, you know, thinking about maybe going to college or looking up stuff, I mean, you've got those opportunities there at the Y. Another thing, too, is that there are also some places where there are going to be meal programs.
Yeah, and another area where we've just grown significantly in our third year now. So our first year, we offered free meals to anyone at five of our locations. In 2018, we increased that to seven locations. We actually bumped that all the way up to 12 locations this year. So Monday through Friday at 12 locations, anyone under the age of 18 can get a free meal at those locations.
All right, and that's no questions asked?
No questions asked. If you're under the age of 18, you walk in and get a meal. And what I would say is the times and locations for those meals are at that same website, ymcamn.org/getsummer.
Okay. How has the program, so this is the third year, so you got off the ground two summers ago. What was it like the first summer? Was it hard to get the word out? And is the word out, you know, pretty much right now, do you think?
Yeah, I think the word is out, and we count on our community partners so much. You know, school districts, other organizations that serve young people, obviously all of our community boards, our funding partners. The Richard M. Schultz Family Foundation has been a fantastic partner. We do some of our own work, but the first year, I think it took us about 2 weeks to fill up 4,800 slots, and like I said, in 4 days, we filled 5,500 already this year. So the word is out. I think young people are on to the fact that the Y is for them and that it's more than just a place to go and play basketball. I think they're starting to really understand that this is a commitment to meaningful activities all summer long. And honestly, just another way that the YMCA shows that we're opening doors and doing the best that we can to really push what's possible.
All right. We're talking to Courtney Harness. He's the executive director and program lead at Get Summer at YMCA. The Y also has, you know, information about programs in the, you know, neighborhoods that it's in. I mean, whether it's an educational program or other programs there. I mean, that's what I think is so cool is that you guys really try and make yourself sort of an anchor of the neighborhood or a place where people can, a conduit for all kinds of programs. I don't know if there's anything you can share about the kinds of things that you might find at One Y or, you know, or the information that's available on the bulletin boards. It's really different from place to place.
Yeah, I would say the old saying across the Y goes, if you've been to One Y, you've been to One Y. And that's really true. You know, a lot of our things are similar and there's a lot of congruency, but each Y specifically goes out to meet the needs of their local community. So what you see for a program at One Y, you might not see in another place. And so I think that's what makes us unique as an organization is that we're agile enough and have the ability to really, really get in touch with our community and find out what folks need so that we can meet those needs ultimately. Get Summer's doing the same thing. We've asked all 26 locations to get feedback from the young people in their area and provide programming that directly meets the needs.
Right. And let me ask you, do you have any information also about, you know, family memberships? You know, people might be thinking, well, gee, you know, I've got a teen, but, you know, maybe I'd like to do that. Or maybe it might be a little out of reach. I mean, do you provide help for other people who are also trying to join the Y?
Yeah, I love that question. And I'll tell you a little bit about our financial assistance program. But I do want to mention a new aspect of Get Summer this year is we've really upped our focus on the entire family, not just the high school student. And so one time per month, so once in June, July, and August, each of the 26 locations will be hosting a family event or activity. And each day that family event or activity is hosted, the entire family of that Get Summer member can go to the Y for free.
Oh,
so
wow.
We want to make sure that the whole family gets the opportunity to understand what this experience for their child or for their brother or sister is like and experience it themselves in a way that's really fun, really active, really meaningful and engaging. And so, you know, the hope is by the end of the summer and through opportunities like this conversation that people begin to understand a little bit that the Y is for everyone. The Y is for all. It doesn't matter what your income level is or where you live or any of those things. There are options for you. And so I would really, really urge folks, if you feel like the Y is the place for you, stop in, talk to some of our membership teams, talk to some of our staff, and find out what those options are for you.
All right. And again, where can you get information about, like, online and then also in person about these free Y memberships for young people?
Yeah. So the online link for to register is ymcamn.org/getsummer. That's where kids and or their parents or guardians can go to register right now, or stop into any one of our 26 membership locations and just ask about the Get Summer program. You can fill out a paper form at the desk and get set up right away.
Right. And don't forget Hudson, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and Hudson and Rochester.
Rochester. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Well, listen, Courtney Harness, Executive Director and Program Lead of Get Summer at the YMCA, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Really appreciate the opportunity, and we're really excited.
Well, it is. It really is. I mean, there's so many wonderful philanthropists, you know, in the Twin Cities that do so many creative things. And I really think kudos to the Richard Schultz and his foundation and the Family Foundation for doing this, because that's a really, really cool idea. And it's making a difference for so many young people and so many families to know. I think it probably is such a peace of mind for parents as well to know that their teens, who sometimes get overlooked because they're not little kids anymore, have some place they can go.
Yeah, absolutely. A great opportunity for so many young people and so many families to know that they can be safe and have a good time all summer long and better themselves. And like you said, we just absolutely could not have done it without the Richard M. Schultz Family Foundation. We're so appreciative of their support and really, really grateful.
Absolutely. Well, just a remarkable, again, act of philanthropy that is benefiting so many people here in the Twin Cities. Courtney Harness, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, folks. We have much more ahead here on News Talk 830 WCCO coming up in our next hour. We've got Professor David Schultz. We got weather. We got news. We got all kinds of things for you. But first, we do have to take a break. You are listening to News Talk 830. It is 7:51 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock, along with producer Devin Marshall. Also want to give a shout out to the producer of the show, set up all the guests, the one and only Susan Blanche, who was, I think she was one of the first producers I worked with here, when I first came aboard here on CCO Radio. And it's been a while, and it's great to be back with Susan again. We've got, as I said, much more ahead coming up in our next hour. We're going to chat with Professor David Schultz. Really interested to get his view on the statements by Robert Mueller that some people view as a non-statement. Was he being too unequivocal? Did he punt once again? Or was the statement more damning of the president? Or was it, once again, as the president said, by omission and exoneration? That's something. I mean, he said he couldn't exonerate the president, but he didn't charge him with a crime or say that he was guilty. And he did say that you couldn't do that because it was unconstitutional to charge a president with a crime. Now there is tension because that seems to have kicked it over to Congress's way. And a lot of people, and you may hear this again at the top of the hour, CBS News last hour had it in their story that there are some Democrats, including some here, who are frustrated with Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic House leadership for their failure to impeach the president, or failure to take action on impeaching the president. So we'll get his views on that. Also want to invite you to tune in to WCCO-TV Sunday morning, 6 a.m., 10:30 a.m., Matt Brickman filling in for Mike Augustinak, and hopefully we will have a very pleasant forecast. The forecast is better than it has been in a while. And then at 10:30, we have two very important guests. The first, as I mentioned before, Governor Tim Walz. It'll be great to see the governor, see what he has to say about the legislative session, criticism that it didn't, that a lot of the work was done in secret. And I'm going to ask David Schultz about that. I mean, there was a response from the Republican Senate Majority Leader, Senator Gazelka, who said, you know, if we hadn't done it behind closed doors, there are people who couldn't have brought up certain issues. And I couldn't help but think when I heard that, there were issues that Senator Gazelka couldn't bring up. because he would have been, as he said it in his statement, he said, well, you know, people would have been, you know, gotten a firing squad from their own caucus. Well, I think that that probably plays on both sides as well. But does more need to be done in terms of getting things more out in the open? A lot of people feel that that is something that, that needs to be done and that should be reserved, you know, for future legislative sessions. So we'll talk to him. And then the other guest that we have is a very interesting woman. Her name is Cheryl Hill, and she founded an organization called Depart Smart. And her son, a number of years ago, went on a high school trip to Japan, one of these, you know, trips that seems so fabulous, obviously not cheap, but just, you know, a wonderful trip that's chaperoned. And tragically, he died. He had a pre-existing condition, and Cheryl, you know, sued. They were not, you know, he, Tyler, was not taken care of properly, and he passed away. And Cheryl has really devoted her life to making sure that other people's foreign trips or trips here in this country go smoothly. And one of the things that she is an expert in, and this is not something that people really think about because you hear about these horror stories, she's an expert about insurance needs. And think about it. If you or a loved one went on an overseas trip, and let's say, let's talk about a minor, more and more young people, used to be something that was kind of a rarity, but now not just college kids, but even high school kids are going abroad. Would you know how much your insurance would cover if your minor child or minor relative got sick, or if you got sick on an international trip? How much would your insurance cover? And is it possible it would cover nothing? Would you have to pay out of pocket for the whole thing? Well, in some cases, that's the case. And so Cheryl Hill has formed this nonprofit to help educate people about traveling, not just abroad, but also here at home, and what you need to know, what kinds of precautions you need to take. And she's always informative. She's always keeping up on some of the latest situations that have occurred. And it's something that I think a lot of people, you think the laws are, or the rules are going to be the same everywhere just because you've gotten insurance. And that's not the case. And I think, and there are probably people out there listening to me right now who, you know, have gone in to have a baby and they thought they were completely covered and they were covered at that hospital. Oh my goodness, the anesthesiologist is out of network. And you're kind of going, what? I'm having a baby and the anesthesiologist is out of network. How am I supposed to deal with that when I'm having a baby? Well, you shouldn't have to, but those kinds of things come up. So we're going to talk to Cheryl Hill about that. So anyway, it should be a really cool show with Matt Brueggemann and myself. And again, Governor Tim Walz will be a guest, and also Cheryl Hill, the founder of Depart Smart, with all kinds of advice on traveling, not just abroad, but also here at home. And this is going to be a very busy travel season. Article I saw on a number of networks just talked about how it's going to be a terrible summer for air travel. And part of me thinks that if you couldn't, that you need to really add up how long it's going to take you from the very moment you leave the house to get to the airport, to park, to get the baggage checked, to get through security, waiting for the airplane, you know, waiting for it to take off, all of that. The other end, you get there, do you have to rent a car? And is it, in fact, better to drive? I think sometimes it is. It depends on how long the drive is. Anyway, keep it here, folks. News Talk A30. David Schultz is next.